Welcome to another Arsblog Arscast on arsblog.com in association with SavileRogue.com, purveyors of the finest cashmere football scarves you will find anywhere. You'll have noticed something a little bit different for the start of this week's Arscast. New theme music. For various reasons, the old theme music had to go. And I have to thank very sincerely the people from thewayout.co.uk who have written this theme tune specifically for Arsblog, for the Arscast, and it's foot-tappingly good. Thank you very much. I really do appreciate that. Coming up on this week's show, we have got an interview with former young gunner and sadly a guy that's had to retire recently, Danny Carbassiun. Arsene Wenger Hawkins is here briefly because odd stuff has been happening to him this week. We talk about the football. There is the player history, of course, from the man in the bar. There's a little something about talk radio and how they see things happening at Arsenal. As well as that, we take a look at your thoughts on who should be our new goalkeeper next season if Jens Lehmann leaves. Just one thing I want to mention is that generally I try and record the Arscast all in one day. Sometimes, though, I record bits earlier in the week, or, you know, to try and get a bit of preparation. And today, Thursday, I'm feeling absolutely shite and I've got a bit of a sore throat. So if you notice me sounding completely different from one section to the other, that's what it is. I recorded something earlier in the week and this terrible gruff sounding stuff is happening on Thursday evening. Okay, since the last Arscast, we've played two games, drawn one, lost one. So it hasn't been a particularly good week in terms of football. We started on last Saturday against Blackburn in the FA Cup. I had the pleasure of meeting up with a couple of Irish bloggers to watch the game, which was a godsend, to tell you the truth, because if I'd been sitting at home watching that on my own, I surely would have dozed off. Just one of those games where we kicked off early, never got going. Blackburn played with 11 men behind the ball as much as possible, which I can understand to an extent, but this is the FA Cup. It's a cup game. You win, you win. If you don't, you don't. And really, there was only one side on that day who tried to win the game. And as badly as we played, you know, you have to give us credit for that. It means a replay on the 28th of February, which is probably the last thing that we need. But there was going to be a game that night anyway. But that was cancelled due to Arsenal Tube Station being renovated or something. That was going to be the Manchester City game. So we would have been playing that night anyway. It just means that Man City game is going to be pushed further on into the season and may cause more fixture congestion. Then on Tuesday night, it was Champions League again, away to PSV. A poor performance, although we could have scored through Rosicki. Henry had a good chance in the first half as well, but in the second half we just didn't play. Midfield, as I said in the blog, is where I thought we lost it. I don't think the strikers played particularly well either, but they didn't get an awful lot of service. People will say Cesc is tired, Gilberto had a bad performance, but I just think, at the moment, whenever we lose a game, there is a huge amount of analysis, an over-analysis, and I honestly think people are looking too much into it. They're going too in-depth to figure out why we didn't perform on the night, instead of just thinking, well, you know, every team goes through a bad period, or every team has one or two or three games in a row where they just don't click. And I think that's what's happened at the moment. I don't think it bears as much scrutiny as people would like to think. I know they're going to point at different players and different systems and should we have played 4-5-1 in Europe, etc., etc., etc. I just think that, you know, we're having a period of games where our football isn't as good as it might be, but I don't think we're going to play like this from now until the end of the season. The defeat against PSV, while obviously very unwelcome and very disappointing, I don't think it means the end of our Champions League hopes either. A lot of people are very negative about the return leg at home. What I would say, and again, it's something I said on the blog, is that when we play big teams or we have big matches, this team has stepped up to the plate every time this season. We've beaten United twice. We did well at Chelsea away with a weakened squad. We've beaten Spurs. When it comes down to it, this team can get results against big teams or in big matches, and I think that we have every chance of going through against PSV at home. It'll need a big performance. It'll need a far, far better performance than the one we put in Holland, but I don't see that there's any reason why we can't do that. Now, moving on very swiftly and very quickly, just to touch on Thierry Henry again. Again, I think the man is suffering from a huge lack of confidence. I'm not quite sure why, but his first touch against PSV was terrible. And for a player as technically gifted as he is, there's something going on. I don't think for one second that his heart isn't with Arsenal. He had to make a decision last May to decide where his heart was. He could have gone to Barcelona. He didn't. He stayed with Arsenal because that's what he wanted to do, for no other reason than that's what he wanted to do. I don't think it's a situation that, you know, he's now looking abroad and wishing he was at Barcelona. You only have to look at the problems that they're having at the moment between Ronaldinho and Eto'o, between Rijkaard and Eto'o, between Rijkaard and Laporta. There's some tension there. And there was even talk of Rijkaard quitting at the end of this season. So not everything in the other garden is rosy. I mean, you look at somewhere like Real Madrid, which is supposedly the biggest club in world football, and for 3 or 4 years now has been an absolute fucking shambles. So I think any thoughts or any suggestion that he would prefer to be somewhere else have to be put into that sort of context as well, because Arsenal is a very, very well-run club. Yes, we're going through a little period of transition, but we're not a complete fucking mess like some clubs out there. Henry himself, I don't know what to suggest. I don't think he's finished by any stretch of the imagination. I do think he's struggling. I don't quite know what the manager can do. If we had Robin van Persie, you'd be more inclined to rest Henry or put Henry on the bench and maybe try and focus him a little. Remember, he was out for the whole of December. Perhaps his loss of form is just coinciding with our little stumble as well, and it's not doing anybody any good. The only thing I would say is that this is the first time in 6 or 7 seasons that a man who has banged in 30 goals every season for us for the last 5 or 6 years has had a slump in form, if you will. While I understand the criticisms, because he set his own standards, and by those standards he's going to be judged, and that's fair enough, I just think that there is a tendency on the part of too many people to look for the quick fix, who are talking about selling Henry, talking about get rid of him. I think we need to support him. Like I said, I understand the criticisms, but it just seems to me a bit unfair that the first time things haven't gone brilliantly for him, people are on his back and the knives are out for him. And that is my last word on that particular subject. Now, after any poor performance by Arsenal, there's always somebody in the media who's ready to pour some salt in those wounds. And on the talk radio stations, they haven't missed the opportunity to have a go. Have a listen.
And it's the AI traffic news. We'll be back with more in an hour.
Welcome back to Talkshite Radio. This afternoon we're talking to journalist and all-round good guy, James Lawton. Hello, James.
Hello there, how are you?
James, we're talking about Arsenal today. And of course, after that crushing, humiliating defeat in midweek to PSV Eindhoven, one of the true minnows of European football, it's all gone terribly wrong, hasn't it, for Arsene Wenger? And of course, Thierry Henry, he's on his way to Barcelona. As our Spanish correspondent, Guillaume Balaguer, has already told us, he's going to sign for them. He's already got a house over there. So what do you think is going on at Arsenal?
Honestly, I think you can trace this whole thing back to a moment in a game a couple of seasons ago when Robert Pires dived against Portsmouth. It really was a very shocking thing to see because until then, football had been a game played by gentlemen, you see. There was a good handshake. Yes, somebody might go in and try and break somebody's leg, but it was all done with a smile. But that day, possibly the worst day in football history, forget Hillsborough, forget Heysel, forget the Ibrox disaster, forget the Brentford fire, when Robert Pires dived, something in football died. And ever since then, Arsenal have got what they deserved. And to be honest, what they really deserve is to be put up against a wall and shot. Especially Arsene Wenger, because he's French, isn't he?
James, very perceptive point. You're not wrong there. And Arsene Wenger's Frenchness is a problem for a lot of people. I know there's not a lot he can do about it, but has he ever tried? No. Anyway, let's take a look at the Carling Cup final. A true English team, Chelsea, against these foreign imports of Arsenal. How do you see it going, James?
Well, I think you've got to say that Chelsea epitomise all that's good with football these days. English players like John Terry, Frank Lampard, Sean Wright Phillips. English to the core, these boys are. And I think they get the moral high ground from Roman Abramovich, who has done so much for English football. And as well as that, Jose Mourinho, a proper gentleman when it comes to the game of football. He's modest, he's self-serving, he's not arrogant. He's all the things that Arsene Wenger and these foreigners at Arsenal aren't. And for that reason, I think a victory for football would see Chelsea winning on Sunday.
Thank you, James. We go to the phone. It's John from Dublin. John, what have you got to say?
I'm an Arsenal fan, and we've been sitting here in traffic listening to the Perriers for the last few minutes, and to be honest, I feel like blowing my fucking brains out because he's a pair of clueless wankers.
No need for that language, John. No, we'll have none of that. What about that, James? Typical Arsenal fan.
He's probably got Robert Pirès pyjamas.
Talk Shite Radio. Talking shite about sport 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day.
And that, my friends, is 100% true. 104% true, even. I promise. Anyway, you might remember a couple of seasons ago, a Carling Cup game against Manchester City at the City of Manchester Stadium. The score was 1-1 with around 10 minutes to go. And Arsene Wenger told Pat Rice to call down one of the substitutes and tell him to get ready because he was going to make his debut for Arsenal. His name was Danny Carbassioun. He is an American. And he came on the pitch and scored the winning goal on his debut and became the first ever American to score for Arsenal. Sadly, after a loan spell at Ipswich and a move to Burnley, Danny has had to retire from the game at the tender age of 22. On this week's Blog Chat, I talked to Danny Carbassioun about why he's had to retire from the game, how he came to join Arsenal, what things were like there, and what his plans for the future might be. So without further ado, I'm very pleased to welcome Danny Carbassioun, and this is this week's Blog Chat. Okay, on Arseblog, on the Arsecast this week, I'm very happy to welcome former Gunner Danny Carbassioun. Hi, Danny.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks. You've obviously had some bad news recently in that you've had to retire from football. What exactly has happened with that, with your knee?
Well, I guess when I was in England this summer, I returned to Burnley for preseason, and my knee was giving me some problems, so I tried to, you know, get treatment and stuff, and they said that I needed to rest a while, so I came home, and after seeing a bunch of doctors, they all decided that probably, I mean, if it didn't heal on its own, then it'd probably be best that I stopped playing just because I was damaging my knee more and more, and that in the future it might be difficult to, I guess, walk around and stuff, and my quality of life might not be as great as I'd want it to be. So I was just faced with the decision. I could have had an operation, and they said, you know, there's no guarantee. It might help for a couple months, maybe a year, maybe 2 years, but they said it's definitely going to give you problems again. What's happened is that the shock absorber in my knee has worn out, and I've had several operations on it, and they've taken pieces out, and now my bones are starting to, I guess, wear down a bit. The cartilage on the bone's starting to wear out, and that's the bad cartilage that you don't want to wear out, because once that happens, then your bones start rubbing together, and then there's big problems after that. So,
and is it a case that you won't ever be able to play at any sort of a level?
I'm not 100% sure. I know I can get some injections. I think I'm going to get some injections done to, I guess, help. I guess just day to day stuff, because still I can't run around as I'd like to be able to run around and stuff. But hopefully, I mean, eventually I'll be able to, you know, play a little bit of soccer here and there, you know, because I don't think I can just quit cold turkey, to be honest.
No, it must be difficult, you know, something very difficult to give up, especially at such an early point in your career. We'll come to, how did the move to Arsenal come about for you?
Well, there's a camp in the United States called the Adidas ESP Camp, which Adidas and, I guess, all the top college coaches invite 150 of the nation's best high schoolers to a camp, and the year I went, it was in Wilmington, North Carolina, and what happens is it's just a big college recruiting event, and all the college coaches, like at least 500 college coaches are there, and they pretty much just look at players and see how they do with the best in the country, and Arsenal's chief scout was in attendance the year I was there, and he, after the week had ended, I won the offensive golden boot, and they brought me over on trial to Arsenal, where I was there for 2 weeks on trial, and I guess I did pretty well that trial, and then they were going to let me finish high school. They said, you can go ahead and finish high school so you have at least a high school degree. So I finished up my year in high school, and halfway through the year I went back to Arsenal for another week's trial just to see. They just wanted to see how I was doing and stuff in December. And in the following summer, I signed the two-year contract then.
You were obviously with the youth side at that stage. What was the sort of daily routine? Were you close to the first team in terms of where you trained, or was it, you know, in your own special group?
Well, at the training ground, the first team train kind of apart from everyone, and the reserves and the youth team train, I guess, side by side. But when I came over, I was 18, so I was too old for the youth team, so I went into training with the reserves straight away, and I got to train with the first team maybe two or three times my first year, and then my second year, when it seemed as if Ashley Cole and Gal Clichy kept getting injured, you know, one after the other, and I just kept filling in for the one that was injured in training, and I got to train with the first team quite a bit that year.
Okay, was that a? I mean, obviously, it's a big step up, but was it something you learned a great deal as a young player to move up, you know, that level from reserves to train with the, you know, the top guys?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was like a dream come true. Obviously, you know, I'll never forget when I was on trial there. It was enough for me, you know, like just to see the guys, you know, every day, see Thierry Henry and see Patrick Vieira and all them every single day, and then, you know, a year and a half later, I was getting to train with them every day. And it was, I mean, it was a big step, and you kind of have to put the whole starstruck thing aside, because at the end of the day, you're kind of fighting for their positions. So it's a huge step, but once you start playing, you kind of settle in, and they're all, I mean, great guys, and they tell you, they talk you through everything, and, you know, they just help you. They know you're, you know, you're going to be nervous, and it's going to be a bit difficult for you, so they help you a lot.
Excellent. I remember watching the Carling Cup game against Manchester City, in which, you know, you became the only American to have scored for Arsenal. How did that feel that night?
I don't think words can explain how I felt, but it was unbelievable. As I said, I wasn't even sure I was going to be in the squad the day we were traveling. I was told I was traveling, but I didn't know I was going to be on the bench or anything. And when he did announce the team, I was on the bench. I was happy for that, and then I warmed up the entire second half, and with 10 minutes left, Pat Rice called me over and said I was going in. And, like, as I said, just coming on and making my debut for Arsenal's first team was, you know, at that point, anyone's happy, you know. And I was lucky enough to get, you know, to be in the right place at the right time, and Cesc played an unbelievable ball. And I was just, you know, once it went in, it's just, I mean, my face pretty much said it all. I think I smiled for about two or three days after that, so.
When it came time to leave, you went on loan first to Ipswich and then to Burnley. How did that process work, and what was the communication like from the club in terms of telling you, look, you know, this club is interested in you and we think you should go, or how does that work?
Well, I actually got a phone call. I was heading home. I was coming home for, I guess, kind of a Christmas break, because I wasn't needed in the first team at Arsenal. I was told I wasn't going to be needed over the holiday period. So they usually let the kids or whoever's not really needed, they let them go home for about 10 days or so. And I was pretty much going, I mean, getting ready to fly home the very next day, and I get a phone call from my agent saying that Ipswich wanted me on loan. So he gave me all the numbers for Joe. He gave me Joe Royal's number and everyone. And I called him and spoke to Joe Royal and about the whole situation. He said, you know, we're not guaranteeing anything, but we need backup. And I just figured it's the best situation. I mean, as much as I wanted to go home, obviously, and as much as I was planning to go home, you know, and seeing all my family and stuff, it was just the best decision to do for my whole career and stuff. And it did get me a lot of, I guess, not publicity, but it exposed me, a lot of exposure for, you know, the next year when my contract was up and teams had gotten to see me play in the Championship and the FA Cup and stuff. So I think it was the best decision to make.
Okay, and your contract, you moved at the end of your contract to Burnley, yeah?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and how does that, you know, how does that work when it comes to leave? You know, do you have a word from the manager or?
Yeah, they discuss all the staff discuss what's going to happen, you know, with you, whether they're going to offer you a new contract. And by the time you're pretty much 20 or 21 at Arsenal and you're not really, really pushing on the first team and looking like you're going to have a shot at making the first team, like, they decide, you know, it's time to let you go. And I was, I mean, as disappointing as it is to hear from, you know, Liam Brady and Arsene Wenger and everyone, they're not going to sign you again. I just took it as, like, you know, it was, I did my best while I was at Arsenal, and I learned so much, and just the 2 years that I was there was an incredible experience. So, I mean, I left with my head high, you know, I didn't have any regrets or anything.
Okay. And you moved to Burnley, and with the greatest respect to Burnley, there's a bit of a difference, isn't there, between the setup at Arsenal and the setup there. Was it a bit of a culture shock?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was a huge difference, obviously, but growing up, I didn't have anything, like, anything at all that was provided at Arsenal, you know, getting to train every day on, I mean, there's heated fields at Arsenal, you know, so if it snows, the fields, you know, don't get really hard, and, like, the whole facility is just amazing, and I didn't grow up with that, so the 2 years that I was there, it was, you know, an unbelievable experience, but I didn't take for granted that, you know, where I came from and stuff. So when I did go to Burnley, it was still, the fields that we played on at Burnley were still a lot better than, you know, where I've grown up, our training field and stuff. So, I mean, it was a culture shock from the previous 2 years, but it didn't take very long for me just to be like, okay, well, this is what I have to deal with now.
And maybe it's a bit too soon, but have you any plans, you know, for the future to stay in football? Or what are you going to do, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely want to stay involved with, you know, soccer. It's been a part of my life I started playing when I was about 4 or 5, so it's been part of my daily regime since then. So, as I said, I can't really just stop doing it. Hopefully, I'm actually speaking with some people and hoping that something can come about and I can get a job, like, staying in the game and stuff. And I'm probably going to start doing some schooling now because I guess I have a lot of free time now, so I can do that.
Sure. You're going to go to L.A. and see David Beckham?
Yeah, I might. I'll see. If when L.A. come to play D.C., I'll probably head on up there. I have a bunch of friends at D.C. United, so I'll definitely go and watch that game. Okay,
brilliant. Listen, Danny, thanks very much for talking to Arseblog today.
No problem.
Thank you very much to Danny Carbassion for taking the time to talk to Arseblog yesterday afternoon. I think we'll all wish him the very best of luck in the future with whatever it is he does. Hopefully he can stay in football. And it is a shame, isn't it, when, you know, the nice guys have to retire at 22 and little wankers like Ashley Cole, they don't get run over by steamrollers and things like that. It's a shame. Moving on very swiftly, I've had some problems locating Arsene Wenger Hawkins this week, you see, because, like all good celebrities, a sex tape has emerged. Arsene Wenger Hawkins has been caught having a threesome with Lindsay Lohan and J.K. Rowling. I can't get him on the phone. He's gone underground. Here's a little snippet of the tape, though.
Oh, baby. Oh, yes. Arsene Wenger Hawkins knows what you want, Lindsay, you filthy little minx. And you, J.K. Rowling. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 ouch. What is that? Is that someone's watch? Do it to me. Yeah, right there. That's it. Further, 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 further. Can't breathe. Back a bit. Yeah, that's it. Now, piss on me.
I think that's probably quite enough of that scandalous stuff. Hopefully, Arsene Wenger Hawkins will be able to show his face around these parts next week. Now then, on last week's Arsecast, I asked you to maybe email during the week and leave some messages about who you thought would be a good replacement for Jens Lehmann, who looks set to leave this summer, and got a few good few emails, in fact. So I'll just read out some of them now, some of your contributions. Rupert says we should buy someone like Casillas or Buffon or possibly Dida, basically someone with presence on the pitch, and get rid of Lehmann. He says, I love the man, but he's always been German second choice up to the beginning of the summer, and I fear Almunia won't be able to take the pressure of being first choice for a club like Arsenal. Dylan from France says he'd like to see Craig Gordon as our new keeper, and he's someone that has been linked with us quite a lot. Gary Miller is a Craig Gordon fan as well. Dylan provided a whole pile of stats about how good he was in the big games against Celtic and Rangers. And there are all sorts of rumours going around about him that Arsenal are paying his wages up there. But I just think, given the bloke that owns Hearts is a crazy lunatic, I just can't imagine that we have too much dealings with them at that level. Richard says, with our record, I honestly think that buying Scott Carson is a great idea. He has impressed all season and is playing fantastically for his tender years. So if we can promise him first team football, I'm sure we can drag him away from Liverpool. And just think, we'd have a keeper for about 15 years because he is quite young. True. Charlie Allen says, the way I see it, Almunia has become an increasingly appealing shout. Indeed, it's obvious that the reason Wenger's given Almunia a domestic cup opportunity has been to test him and to see if he has what it takes. After all, there's no need to splash out when you have a perfectly able candidate in your midst. David says, I like the link to Carson. It would be nice to throw somebody English on the pitch. Andy says, Almunia will clearly be given the starting spot. Arsene rates him. I think he's always been a world-class shot stopper, but previously has suffered from very dodgy decision-making at times. It looks like that is being overcome by and large now. He's used the ability to come off his line and some other player one-on-one a couple of times in recent weeks. I would be happy to see him given a chance. Stephen says, I think Almunia could cope with being number one, but fear he's not reached an acceptable level yet and may end up a simple scapegoat for defensive mistakes. Arsene will have to spend the money from the transfer of Lehman and some, otherwise all his previous work on the outfield squad will be worthless. Number one, I don't think we're going to get any money for Jens because his contract is up, and given the age he is anyway, I don't think we would have got more than 350 for him. So a number of people willing to see Almunia given a go, which is interesting. I think he's a great number two keeper, I have to say, and I'm very happy that he's done well in the Cups. I'm just not 100% sure that he is number one material. I don't think the chances of us buying somebody like Casillas or Buffon, and especially not Dida, I just can't see that happening either. So maybe somebody like Scott Carson, who was very, very impressive despite the fact we put four past Charlton at the Grove there a little while ago. George left an interesting message on the Arsebyte system. This is what he had to say.
Hello, Arseblogger. I don't know who should be our goalie if Jens leaves. I don't think Almunia should be our starting keeper for the first team because I just don't have enough faith in him as the number one goalie. I think he's an excellent backup, though. However, whomever Arsene Wenger selects to be our new keeper in the future, I hope that keeper wears a kit that matches the excellent suit that Johan Giroud wore when he went to visit the Queen. I think that sort of fashion statement on the pitch would be smashing. Thank you.
I too think that sort of fashion statement would be smashing. Can you imagine a keeper in that kind of silky fabric that Juru was wearing that day? Where did he get that suit? From fucking curtain makers or something? I don't know. These guys earn a lot of money. You think they could, you know, go out and buy a nice suit somewhere, you know. Something a bit Miami Vice, even. Anyway, those are your thoughts on keepers. What's going to happen in the summer is anyone's guess, really. If I had to put money on it, I would say that we're going to buy a new keeper. I would doubt that Almunia is going to be promoted to number one. But again, it all depends, one, how much money we've got, and two, who's actually available. And if nobody really outstanding is available, then perhaps we'll see Almunia as number one. But there are obviously many, 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 many factors to take into account. So nobody knows what's going to happen. This week, the man in the bar is talking about probably my favourite Arsenal player ever.
Ah, well, hello there, Mr. Arseblog. You're looking a little bit sad this week, I have to say. Yeah, well, it's been a fairly shite week, hasn't it? That old fucking Blackburn and then PSV. For fuck's sake, what's that about? Anyway, plenty of time to turn it around. We shall look on the positive side of things. Anyhow, this week I'm going to talk about probably the greatest Arsenal player that ever lived. No, not Pal Lyderson. The man himself, Liam Brady. You have to excuse me, I've a bit of a frog in my throat. Came home last night, and the missus, what did she got for dinner? Fucking frog! And there's a bit of it stuck down there. I had an old broom handle down to see if I could get rid of it, but nothing worked. Anyway, we'll talk about Liam Brady. He joined Arsenal in 1970, came all the way from Dublin, and went to London only as a young fella. He was over there with Frank Staplegun and the man with the funniest nose in football, David O'Leary. He turned professional at the age of 17, and by the 74-75 season, he was a fixture in the team, you see. And that was because he was fucking brilliant. He had a left foot so cultured it could have painted the fucking Sistine Chapel. And he scored some brilliant goals too, like that one against Spurs that wiggled and waggled left and right, then up then down then sideways, and turned the goalkeeper inside fucking out before going in the top corner. He was a magic man too. People underestimate how good he was, you see, these days of star players. In those days, Liam Brady was a shining light, a shining beacon in a sea of Arsenal shite. But he had some brilliant moments, like that Boxing Day, do you remember that one? When there were 60,000 people packed into Highbury and all the concession stands had broken down and there were only 5 loaves and 2 fish. And from the 5 loaves and 2 fish, Liam Brady fed the thousands of people that were at Highbury that day. His last game for Arsenal was the 1980 Cup Winners' Cup Final, you see. And on the way home from that, the lads were very disappointed because they missed the penalties. Poor old Liam missed the penalties, you see, and Graham Ricks too. And we lost to Valencia. And they got on the plane to come back home. And all they had on the plane was water. Can you imagine? The lads wanted to drown their sorrows and all they had was water. So Liam, being Liam, he raised his hand gently, waved it around a bit, and he turned the water into wine, and all the lads got fucking shit-faced on the way home. It was great. Anyway, after he left Arsenal, he went to Juventus, who are a big pack of cunts. And after Juventus, he went to Inter Milan and Sampdoria, and then came back to England to play for Arsenal's retirement home, West Ham. After that, he was manager of Brighton and Celtic, but turned out he wasn't a very good manager, and now he's in charge of the youth development system at Arsenal. He's also a bit of a pundit on Irish TV, where his nemesis is Eamon Dunphy. And it's quite obvious to anyone watching that Brady thinks Dunphy is a shit-eating, piss-faced wanker. Well, what, were you expecting some kind of funny ending? Way over that.
That was The Man in the Bar, and he'll be back next week with another player history. Nearly ran into a bit of trouble down in the bar, I have to say. There was a guy looking over while I was doing the recording and giving it the old dagger eyes, you see. I'm not sure he appreciates the Arsenal stuff. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, he'll be back next week, provided there isn't a huge ruckus or something like that. The final thing is to announce the two winners of the Savile Rogue scarves. Now, every week there'll be 2 scarves to give away for the best contribution to the Arscast, be it an email, be it an audio message, or be it a great big sack of money sent to my address. This week, the two winners are George, who left the message about the shiny suited goalkeeper, which I thought was very funny, and Igor the Brute, who left another audio message. And as he said himself, though, the joke has worn a bit thin. And to be honest, Igor, yeah, it really has worn thin. I'm sorry. I'm not even going to play the message. But for fantastic services rendered to Arscast previous, you get yourself a scarf, Igor. If you would like to contribute, all you have to do is send an email to arscast@arsblog.com. Please pay attention to the email address. That's arscast@arsblog.com. Don't send the emails to the guy at arscast.com, because he keeps sending them on to me and going, look, you know, can you stop your people sending me all these emails? So arscast@arsblog.com. Or if you'd like to leave an audio message, what you can do is go to the Arsblog homepage, click onto the Arscast page, and you'll find a link there which takes you onto the audio page. What I might try and do as well is get a Skype number or a Skype thing that you can leave voicemails on as well. So maybe that's a little bit easier for people as well if they want to contribute something audio-wise to the Arscast. So well done to George and to Igor. You get your scarves. There'll be 2 more to give away on next week's show. So, you know, get contributing, people. I suppose, really, given the fact that I'm at the end of the show, I should have done some kind of a preview for the Carling Cup final. All I know is that we're going to play a young team. I am going to drink some lucky beers, and I suggest to all of you out there that you drink some lucky beers as well, because every Carling Cup game, I have drunk some lucky beers. They happen to be bottles of Stella Artois. I think if everybody drinks lucky beer on Sunday, the lads can win it. Either way, I'm very proud of them for getting there, and you can be quite sure that Chelsea, despite the absence of John Terry, won't play any of their young players. They'll have their first 11 out. So whatever happens, the boys have done brilliantly to get there, and they'll get the support and the praise that they deserve, whatever happens on Sunday. But with lucky beer, we shall prevail. Yes. Beer. Anyway, that's it for another Arsecast. We're back next week with another one. Until then, enjoy the weekend. Talk to you next week on the blog. See you later. My voice is gone. Bye.